CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Gregory's been watching very carefully Ethiopia these last months and years, especially, however, since the Biden administration got involved in an Ethiopian civil war. The civil war has many players. The two major ones to remember are Prime Minister Abiy, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, who leads the government and the military, and the Tigray Popular Liberation Front of a particular part in the north of Ethiopia, a mountainous part. The conflict right now is on what appears to be a pause, although not quite a ceasefire that is satisfactory to all players. I note, however, that Ethiopia, which weeks ago, when Gregory was reporting the crisis, was under siege by the Tigray Popular Liberation Front that was said to be surging towards the capital. And the prime minister, donning military garb, said he was going to rally the forces and lead a pushback. Well, he was successful. So the capital, Addis Ababa, that was threatened by military force, is now host, it was now these last days, the host of the African Union dignitaries coming to celebrate the African Union's authority, but it also to urge a permanent ceasefire in Ethiopia. The headline from the hours past, African Union urges for political solution to Ethiopia conflict with immediate ceasefire. Subhead, African Union appeal for an immediate ceasefire, urging all parties involved in Ethiopian conflict to find a long-term political settlement. Gregory, it's an amazing turn of affairs. We'll just note that the AU came to a place that was not safe some months ago, but is now safe now, thanks to the work of Prime Minister Abiy and the Ethiopian military. Is this an irony that's lost on the African Union, that they're calling for a ceasefire in a capital that was under fire before Abiy acted?
Well, it is an irony, but the African Union and its predecessor, the Organization for African Unity, was itself an irony, trying to pull some sanity together in a troubled continent. The reality is that the African Union statement urging a political and peaceful settlement is, as we like to say in Scandinavia, blah, 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 blah. The reality is that you're not going to have a peaceful or political settlement until the rebels, the TPLF, and the Oromo Liberation Front and the Oromo Liberation Army and its Shere, genocidal groups, themselves abide by it. It's easy enough to get the government of Ethiopia to abide by a ceasefire and a reconciliation approach, which it has done, and it would continue to support that. But getting the rebel groups to do that is another matter, and the rebel groups have been supported by outside powers, particularly the Egyptian government, on and off. I mean, we had the President Sisi of Egypt, when he came into office, did stop Egyptian financial and military support for the Oromo Liberation Front and the like. But the reality is that Egypt has been encouraged to go back into destabilizing Ethiopia because there's a great Egyptian domestic call to punish somebody for the water shortage in Egypt, and Ethiopia is the logical target for that. But the reality is that Prime Minister Abiy in Ethiopia has really surged in domestic popularity and in his ability to win back all of the African governments to the rule of law. He has one of the more democratically elected governments in Africa at this stage, which is an irony, considering that for almost half a century before that, the elections in Ethiopia were farcical. And he actually staged something relatively credible in the last year or two. So basically, what's happened is that Prime Minister Abiy has gained the upper hand. The U.S.-backed TPLF have been forced onto their back foot, and the State Department, U.S. State Department itself, has been called away to a more important war in Ukraine. So basically, the situation is that Ethiopia continues to gain strength, and Abiy has won back the support of many Ethiopians, but he still has not addressed all of the things he could be addressing. He represents an Oromo political faction. He's half Oromo himself and half Amhara, but he's basically been reluctant to crack down on these radical and genocidal separatists from the Oromo Liberation Front and their Oromo Liberation Army and the Shere groups. So he has to do that to gain full credibility. He can also expect in the short term to regain a strenuous alliance structure with Eritrea and with Djibouti, possibly rebuilding the Ethiopian Empire, the Confederation, which includes Eritrea and Djibouti and Ethiopia proper, which would make it a massive Red Sea power and really critical to the security of the lower Red Sea. And this is something which actually terrifies the Egyptians, who want to be the sole power controlling the Red Sea, even though they don't. But it's going to be an interesting period. And the interesting thing is that Prime Minister Abdi is driven, if you like, by the vision of Emperor Haile Selassie. When Abiy went to the front to carry the war to the TPLF, that was channeling or emulating Emperor Haile Selassie's move to throw out the Italians in the Second Italian-Ethiopian War in 1935. And it really inspired a lot of Ethiopians. The appointment of the chief of the general staff of the Ethiopian Armed Forces lately as a field marshal was highly symbolic because, of course, Emperor Haile Selassie was a field marshal. Interestingly, Haile Selassie was not an Ethiopian field marshal. He was made a field marshal in the British Army by Queen Elizabeth II because of the Great Alliance during World War II. But it has some kind of resonance, this imperial resonance, and Abiy is playing on that. And Abiy has been also using, if you like, the symbolism of the Ethiopian imperial crown and period to gain or regain the unity of Ethiopia.
I note, Gregory, that the charges of human rights abuses continue. And lawyers acting for Tigrayan civilians said the complaint filed within these last hours marked the first time that the African Union's Human Rights Commission has been asked to look into the conduct of Ethiopian troops in the war. Of course, it should be investigated, but this was a charge against Prime Minister Abiy and the Ethiopian government long before the battle was settled. This was a charge we talked about it for weeks. The charge would come out of Europe. What is it that the outside authorities, and I don't mean Russia and China, I mean in Europe and in the United States, what is it that they find to fault in Prime Minister Abiy? He's a Nobel Peace Prize winner, and he has the loyalty of the army and of the capital. So why do they fault him?
Part of this is the State Department support of the TPLF. TPLF is a Marxist, genocidal, extremist group and always has been. However, when they were in power, when they actually controlled all of Ethiopia, the Obama administration particularly relied on the TPLF to give the U.S. access to bases and so on in Ethiopia for attacks on the Somalis. So there was a relationship built up between key officials in the Obama administration, and these were a lot of the earlier Clinton people as well. So they built up a strong relationship with the TPLF, and when Obama left office, they then became consultants to the TPLF in private life. So they are going back to their standard procedure, which is blame the victim. In other words, before you can be accused of genocidal and other atrocities yourself, you blame your adversary. So that puts your adversary on the back foot. So if Abiy, for example, says, well, hey, we're not committing the genocide, it was you guys, it says, yeah, well, you would say that, but we got in first with the charge. And there's in psychological warfare, gaining the psychopolitical high ground does often engage in getting to be the active initiator of events. Action is strategic, reaction is tactical and weak. So what you've got now is the TPLF getting in these allegations so that they get a serious hearing within the African Union, because most people are paying very scant attention to the underlying fundamentals of this. So when the TPLF says you need to investigate these charges, well, yes, absolutely you do, but it cannot be on a selective basis. If the TPLF has opened the door to a discussion on genocide and atrocities, then they better be prepared to be scrutinized themselves, because we've got now massive evidence, which, as the TPLF were cleared out of areas that they'd been controlling in the Amhara and Afar regions, the devastation that they caused and the murders of massive numbers of civilians, women and children, but particularly even destroying hospitals and clinics, and not only the patients therein, but the doctors and nurses as well. I mean, we're seeing this conducted on the basis of eradicating a people on the basis of their ethnicity or their religion. And so the TPLF and the Oromo Liberation Front have both been doing this, and by the way, working closely together. So yes, the human rights aspect absolutely needs to be investigated, and the government needs to be held accountable for any atrocities which may have occurred from government forces. But let's face it, the government forces have been far more disciplined and far more focused on driving out an armed adversary than on inflicting injuries and harm based on indiscipline and if you like, emotional racism or other factors.
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs about Ethiopia and the apparent restoration of stability in Ethiopia in the Horn of Africa. But many weeks to go, the African Union meeting in Addis Ababa, where it was a conflict zone just a month ago, certainly is an endorsement for the government. We're going to turn to another government that's under siege, and that would be the People's Republic of China, and the besieging forces have televisions. This is CBSI on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.